Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The pandemic is exacerbating the daily challenges individuals living with disabilities already face, including putting limits on regular transportation services to appointments in order to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Advocates are also concerned about the prospect of medical rationing by the Indian Health Service. The concerns prompted the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to issue guidance in the event it comes to that. We'll talk about these issues and more right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is helping conserve energy as snow continues to fall across the state. Cherokee Nation businesses, including 9 casinos, are temporarily closed through Friday as the region faces utility shortages and winter weather warnings. Tribal business officials are assessing conditions and say the Cherokee Nation is doing its part for the safety and well-being of the community. Reopening is expected Friday afternoon, but could change as officials consider weather and energy conditions. The Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources has scheduled a hearing to consider the nomination of Deb Haaland for Secretary of the Interior. The hearing will be held Tuesday morning, February 23rd, in Washington, D.C. As a member of Congress from New Mexico, Haaland, Laguna, and Jemez Pueblo has been a strong advocate for Native American and environmental issues. Tribal leaders in recent weeks have continued to voice support for Haaland, hopeful a Native American will lead the Interior Department. After a number of Republican members of Congress are opposing her nomination over concerns of resource development. Committee members will participate in Tuesday's hearing both in person and virtually. It will be streamed online for the public. A Native woman running for mayor of Seattle reflects on growing up in a small town in Alaska. Tim Ellis with KUAC has more.
Colleen Echohawk began her journey 44 years ago in the small town of Delta Junction, Alaska, where she was raised. Echohawk says growing up in a small town helped her appreciate the ties that bind a community together.
There is a lot of diversity in the little towns.
Diversity like Echohawk's father, Howard, a Pawnee Indian who came to town in the 1970s to work for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Echohawk says her father taught her and her 7 sisters and brothers that they should be proud of their heritage and learn more about it.
Every day he would say to us, "You are a Pawnee. You are an Echohawk, and you can do anything."
She gained an even greater appreciation of her identity when a similarly multicultural family moved in next door. The father of the family next door was Fred John, son of Katie John, the renowned Otna Athabascan, whose decades-long legal fight led to greater subsistence fishing rights for Alaska Natives. Echohawk says she was inspired by Katie John's determination to win the case.
We have the incredible privilege of seeing her fighting for subsistence. We have the incredible privilege and honor for us to call her Grandma Katie.
After she graduated from high school in 1994, Echohawk went to college, earned degrees, then traveled around the country and abroad before settling in Seattle in 2003. There she worked for the American Indian Heritage Middle College before taking a job with the Chief Seattle Club, an organization that helps urban Native people in need. She's now its executive director. Echohawk says the success of the Seattle Club's program and her appreciation of communities big and small led her last month to declare her candidacy for mayor of Seattle.
That was Tim Ellis reporting. Jasmine Blackwater Nygren, Navajo, was sworn into the Arizona State Legislature last week to replace a representative who resigned to join the Biden administration. Emma Gibson from Arizona Public Media has more.
Blackwater Nygren recently passed Arizona's bar exam, and she's worked within the Navajo Nation's legislative and judicial branches. She received her bachelor's degree from Stanford and her law degree from Arizona State. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez congratulated the new member of Arizona's state legislature, and he said he always encourages young members of the nation to get an education, then help their communities. Myron Sosi is the other state representative for District 7, which covers a large portion of the Navajo Nation. For National Native News, I'm Emma Gibson.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. If you're a Native American expanding or starting a business, the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can make the business loan you need. Info by emailing dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shiritui via Skype. It certainly is trying times, and our guests today say people with disabilities continue to face extra challenges because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Transportation is a major issue for many of them trying to get to medical appointments. They also say many public health operations do not prioritize people with disabilities for vaccines, even though some studies suggest they are more at risk. One study from the Johns Hopkins University points to the prevalence of pre-existing conditions as one factor. From what we've heard so far, there is a lot to consider. And if you are living with a disability and would like to share your experience facing the pandemic, we hope you'll give us a call today. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We definitely look forward to your calls. And today we are going to start off in Shiprock, New Mexico. We have Hosky Benali with us, Benali Jr. He is the president of the Navajo Nation Advisory Council on Disabilities, and he is the community government liaison for the Native American Disability Law Center. And he is Dene. It's my pleasure to have him here. And Hosky, please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Good morning. I'm here in Shiprock, and I'm Dene. So I'm glad to be here on the program today. Thank you.
Well, Hosky, thank you for being with us today, too. And you are visually impaired. And I would like to hear first-person account of really what it's meant to be able to navigate in this pandemic. How much has it affected you personally?
Yeah, I have a degenerative eye disease called retinitis pigmentosa. And I was born with this degenerative eye disease. And back in my early years, up to age 22, I had night blindness, which is part of the degenerative eye disease that I have. And then at age 22, in a matter of 2 weeks, I lost a lot of my vision, my center vision, had some peripheral vision, eventually it all diminished. But as far as dealing with COVID, you know, it's been, I guess, I'm an advocate for people with disabilities, and my worry is more about what's happening out there, especially since I'm working with the Navajo Nation, what's happening with people with disabilities on the Navajo Nation. And a lot of things have changed, a lot of issues have come up. And so with the Native American Disability Law Center, we have tried to advocate in ways to make sure that Navajos with disabilities and Native Americans across the country are not discriminated against. And so a lot of virtual meetings before I was able to go into Window Rock and work with the government and have face-to-face meetings. But today is virtual meetings, and so it gets a little difficult at times. The Navajo Nation government is also working with virtual meetings. But for myself, I'm lucky that I have a wife that drives me and takes me around. But I know others don't have that same gift, I guess you would say, that they have to depend on their own to get around. And I think that's one of the reasons why Native Americans in general have a high risk of catching and being infected by COVID, because they have used public transportation. They also have appointments they have to meet, medical appointments. And they also, some of them can't wear face masks because of their disability, and to have people coming in to take care of them. So they're at a high risk of getting infected.
And Husky, through all of this, have there been any major issues or repeated issues that keep coming up, especially when it comes to laws, as well as taking a look at discrimination towards people who are living with disabilities? Are there any things that have kind of come up because of the pandemic, or new things that maybe people weren't thinking of before and now they're thinking of it? Anything like that?
Yes. Back in March last year, as the virus started to spike here on the Navajo Nation, we became concerned that because we all know that IHS is underfunded and there's a lack of a lot of resources, health resources, and we became concerned that people with disabilities, they have a disability, may face discrimination.
Hey, Husky. Husky, I'm going to jump in here. We kind of dropped out for a minute. Go ahead and start your thought again.
Yes, here on the Navajo Nation, back in March of last year, we became concerned that when the virus started to spike, and we all know that IHS is underfunded, and it was said that, reported that the Navajo Nation had only 30 ventilators. And so we became concerned that people with disabilities, if they were to get infected by COVID and they went to receive medical services, that they may be discriminated against because of their disability. Just because of the bias that you have a disability, people look at your quality of life. They're more apt to serve those that they think are more productive. And so it became an issue of medical rationing. And so we asked IHS for any policies that they might have regarding medical rationing to make sure that their policies did not discriminate against people with disabilities. We didn't receive an answer for maybe 5-6 months, but I personally talked to Dr. Michael Wiyaki, who's the IHS director, asking him for some information on that. We didn't get it, so the Native American Disability Law Center, New Mexico, Disability Rights, and Arizona Center for Disability Law, we filed an OCR complaint with Health and Human Services that they had not published anything. They're not giving us anything. And so just recently, on the second wave again, it came through in regards to that IHS was going to look at what they were calling resource allocation. And so that, again, because it was spiking and it was being said and reported to the Navajo Nation Council that they're running out of medical supplies, beds, people were being sent to different border towns, and that they would have to go with a what they were calling resource allocation and determine who's going to benefit most from the treatment services for COVID. And so we were alarmed at that. But finally here on January 6th, they came through with some guidance that were published from IHS and assured us that they weren't going to discriminate, but we're still looking at that. making sure that monitor that. Now, with vaccinations, the same thing. We were hoping that people with disabilities would be a priority for the vaccinations. They were saying frontline and people in congregate places would be the first ones. And then those over 65, and they were saying those with who are vulnerable, but then specifically say disability. So again, we were concerned about people with disabilities getting vaccinated because of their underlying health conditions that can worsen with the infection of COVID. So those are the things that we worked on, but eventually we're hoping now that this will be a wake-up call. We did meet with the Biden administration. They had a listening session with us, and we said that IHS needs to be, the funding needs to be increased because, you know, we don't want to go through this again. So those are some of the rights. As far as Navajo Nation, we have a Civil Rights for Individuals with Disabilities Act. And they said, in that act, they said they can't be discriminated. People with disabilities can't be discriminated based on their medical needs. So,
well, Husky, I appreciate you sharing all of that with us today. And maybe this has really opened up something that really affects you in your community, and especially during these times. And if you are living with a disability, we want to know, what kind of challenges have you faced during the pandemic? And our ears open to some of your concerns. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Maybe you have a family member who has a disability. You can call in too. What kind of services are you able to access? Have things changed? How have you shifted to meet all of that? Go ahead and give us a ring. We look forward to hearing from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And coming up, we're going to hear from some more folks who have different views into all of this. But if you miss anything, just want to let you know, you can also find this program in our archives at NativeAmericaCalling.com. But again, if you have questions too, and you want to access the people we have on the line today, we hope you will dial in, give us a ring. We're on for a full hour. 1-800-996-2848 again is the number. And hang tight, there is more ahead. In many places, COVID-19 numbers have decreased. Public health experts say it's also not a time to let down our guard. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk with tribal leaders about their recent successes and challenges in facing the pandemic. We'll also hear what they're hoping for in the upcoming weeks. We hope you'll make plans to join us.
Centers for Medicare to Medicaid Hachipkan.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about disabilities in the pandemic. And if you are living with a disability, has it been harder to navigate through your daily routine? What are some of the challenges you face? Call us and share. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. We do look forward to your calls. Here with us today is the president of the Navajo Nation Advisory Council on Disabilities. With us today is Husky Benali Jr. Also on the line, too, out of Laguna Pueblo, New Mexico, is Joseph Ray. He is the Vice President, Board of Directors for United Nursing Homes and Tribal Excellence, also known as UNITE. And he is also the Chairman of the National Congress of American Indians Disability Subcommittee. And Joseph is Laguna Pueblo, Zuni, and Maidu. My pleasure to have him here. And Joseph, thanks for joining us, and please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Morning, Tara. And good morning to everyone out there, to all my relatives. My clans are Eagle and Corn. So hello to all my relatives and thank the Creator for bringing us all together today. Appreciate that.
Well, we appreciate you being here, Joseph. And your thoughts, what do people need to know? What would you like to share with them about what it means to be a person living with a disability during a pandemic? You are paraplegic, and I know you have shared your story many times and are doing great work to really bring advocacy to what it means to be living with a disability. Joseph, tell your story.
Well, thanks again. Like Hosky, I'm so fortunate to have such a great support system around me. I'm the eldest of four children. My mother passed on, the late Catherine Ray, but again, we're so fortunate to be a strong family unit. You know, at times we are like any other family, have struggles, but I think, again, our mother and our relatives here in Laguna and in here in Tsimuna, Parahi Village, taught us that we need to stick together as best we can and still remain in love one another. And I think that's what has enabled me to be able to survive this these lean times, I guess you could say. But one thing that I wanted to convey, a message from my peers out there in the Laguna area and throughout Indian country, is that people with disabilities, we're resilient, and we've been able to create support systems for ourselves that have enabled us to survive. Thanks to my brother Husky for conveying that message. We depend on Indian Health Service to be our primary caregivers mostly, we're concerned about the plight of other persons and elders with disabilities out there, how COVID is impacting their lives. I'm so thankful here at the Pueblo Laguna. Our leadership has been proactive, and I did receive my second vaccine shot approximately a week ago, 2 weeks ago, excuse me. And, I didn't have any side effects. And so just hoping again to get back with my Baba down, my granddaughter down in Phoenix, Kalino Kea. I haven't seen her for a year or held her for that long. So, again, I'm missing her. And that's my main goal, is to stay healthy. One thing that people with disabilities at times, like myself, due to society at times, keeping a distance, we've been forced to practice social isolation at times, and so it's not something we're not used to. So I wanted to convey that message also, that people with disabilities are resilient, and we're thankful for that.
Indeed. And Joseph Ray, when this pandemic first started and people were starting to see the limitations it was putting onto our daily lives, what were some of your major concerns? And has anything changed since we started seeing limits and barriers being placed on our activities? Anything you want to share, especially when it comes to people living with disabilities and what they're facing?
I became concerned when I started hearing on some of the national news reports that in other cities in the East were their health systems and their hospitals were, and their boards of directors were having to contemplate rationing care, and that it had been reported that people with disabilities and our quality of life have been discounted, and that, again, because there aren't a lot of advocates out there speaking on behalf of my peers, our peers, other people with disabilities, young and old, that, that our lives were being undervalued. And so, again, I'm fortunate. I'm proactive in my own life. And I take steps to take care of myself. But again, that rationing of care and then discounting the quality of life for my peers and elders, I did not want that to become policy in my community, in my tribal health system. So that was a concern. And so so that was, again, it was thankfully a meeting with discussion with the Native American Disability Law Center, Hoskey, and his group brought us together to start working on that, bringing that notice to entities that we were part of, such as NCAI. At the time, NCAI had created a health education health and education committee related to COVID. So they definitely reached out to me, and I included myself in the discussion to definitely make sure that people with disabilities were being heard. So again, it's unfortunately at times our lives are undervalued, or if we're not heard from, if our voices aren't heard from, then people, our tribal leaders, don't know what people's with disabilities needs might be.
Sure, and all the more reason why this conversation is important today too. Maybe no one has taken the time to hear or ask that question. How challenging these times have been, what things you've had to adjust because you are living with a disability. Today is your day. Share with us, 1-800-996-2848. And Joseph, when it comes to accessing medical care, what has been your story? Has it been, tell me about it. I don't want to put anything on it. What have you experienced trying to get the medical care you need?
Well, I've been paraplegic for 33 years, it's always been a challenge because I've always wanted to stay close here to home. My family's here, and you know, that's where I prefer to stay, here at the home base. And it's been a challenge because, again, as a paraplegic, my healthcare needs were very important to me, and having the needs met is a challenge with the local system, it seemed, local hospital. It seemed I was always educating the provider or the doctor when I would go in with a spinal cord injury, because they went by the book or medical model or didn't ask enough questions, and it seemed I was doing education quite often of a new provider. So that high turnover rate has always been a challenge. So I learned very early that I had to stay healthy and at the best I could. And, you know, one thing with the COVID and all the hand washing, I think that's improved my health quite a bit, because I wasn't as diligent as I should have been prior to COVID and pandemic. So knock on wood, in other ways, again, it's helped me remind myself that I need to be extra, pay extra attention to my hygiene. So that's always been a challenge. Another challenge that has always been very great is the access to transportation. I'm so fortunate, as I mentioned, to have my support system here at home, where I could call on my sisters or family members for a ride. I didn't have a vehicle for a period of time, and thankfully now I'm back up on four more wheels. But again, that's always a challenge with the COVID shutting down our public transportation, our Shushka transportation, as we call it here at Laguna, Roadrunner transportation. So that, you know, again, the priority there was given to persons that had medical appointments. There was no more, you know, running down to the store or running to the local market, the post office for those needs. We had to become creative. So that transportation is always a big concern. Then the housing, the overcrowding housing with COVID, you know, so many families, multiple family housing, as they say, it's been termed. And here in Laguna, we've always had, at times, had shortages of housing. And because of COVID, of course, it's been a concern with people with the multi generations. I'm sorry to report, and it was sad to hear that one of the younger granddaughters down in Phoenix, who lived in a multi generational home, acquired COVID last year. Thankfully, she got over it, but again, she was grandma was there, and you know that was a really scary time. And then my nephew had it a few months ago, a young man, but thankfully he recovered. So again, it's a major concern. We, you know, so few of our young men, they're out there trying to be productive, and but again, putting themselves at risk working in the cities.
Mm-hmm. And you know, just to understand, you know, what we go through in our communities, do we get the full story? Even especially when you consider those who are in our communities who are living with disabilities, Joseph Ray has given us a view into his life. So is Husky Benally Jr. If you'd like to give us a view too, you can dial in 1-800-996-2848. And Husky, thinking about where you go to get your medical needs, I'm wondering, what have you heard or what have you experienced in terms of people accessing healthcare? Have different facilities, healthcare facilities, shifted, especially, you know, people who are having to travel long distances to get the healthcare they need because we live far away from our different clinics and hospitals? Anything you want to share about those facilities shifting to meet the needs of people with disabilities? Is it happening? Anything you want to share, Husky?
Well, Tom, I know here on Navajo, we have like clinics out in the different communities, in addition to your medical centers. And what they had to do because of the numbers of infected individuals is that they had to close the clinics down out there and bring the people in to help in the hospitals. A lot of it, I know that a lot of people were even scared to go to the hospitals because the beds were all full with COVID patients. And even, I guess I would say that I was, I have diabetes and I need to go get my medication and see my doctor. And it's a situation where you don't really want to go there, but you need to go there. And I think it got very limited where also if you wanted to, you couldn't just show up like we normally do. We had to call in, set an appointment, talk with our doctor, and then go in at the time that we were scheduled. So it was very limited in a lot of ways. As far as medication, when you saw your doctor, then he would call you back later and tell you that he forwarded the medication order to the pharmacy. Then you had to call the pharmacy and tell them that you're going to be coming in and make sure that your medication has prescription has there. So you go in at times where they tell you to come in. And then a lot of the COVIDs were like, you stay in your car. I know when my wife and I got tested for COVID, we went up to the hospital here in Shiprock and we stayed in the cars and they asked us questions and then they tested us. Same way when we got our vaccinations, they're doing it in my chapter houses or like today they're doing 16 and over at Shiprock High School. So hopefully, like I said earlier, I hope this is a wake-up call as to what do we need to prepare for in the future, because in addition to that, you know, we have this new strain of virus that is being talked about on the news, and hopefully I've got both of my shots, and hopefully that's going to be enough to protect me against the other strains of viruses that have been identified. So, you know, there's still that fear. I think the other thing that people don't really realize is that it caused a lot of fear. I know people, because of the COVID, they went to the extreme stay at home. They were told whether kids don't go out, when you get home, take off your clothes and wash with hot water, take a shower, and make sure that you wash your hands all the time. And it caused a lot of stress. And I know if a person that was diagnosed with paranoia, got real stressed out over it, had a lot of fear, didn't want to go anywhere, and ended up in a for psychiatric help in one of the facilities in Albuquerque. So those things did happen also, and they're probably still happening, where there's some mental issues that came along with COVID. So.
Sure. You know, the mental stress that all of this is putting on all of us is a very heavy weight. And I'm glad you brought that up too, Husky. There is so much to be said about what people are having to face during this pandemic. And then taking this specific look on what people with disabilities are facing. A lot of times talking about this stuff leads to improving things or even putting things on the radar. And often they don't make it there. If you'd like to share some thoughts, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, who have been providing scholarships and other support to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Scholarship applications for the upcoming school year are being accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Application deadline is May 31st.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling here on this day. And if you would like to share some thoughts in our discussion today as we talk about those living with disabilities, what they're facing in the pandemic, you can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And with us today out of Shiprock, New Mexico, is Husky Benally Jr., with the Native American Disability Law Center. Also here, too, Joseph Ray, who has many titles, including the National Congress of American Indians Disability Subcommittee member. Thank you both for being here with us. And Husky, I did want to bring up something, too. And when we talk about needs being met, and a lot of times we're hearing people who are in the most vulnerable categories, and often that includes people living with disabilities, are they given the priority that they really need in terms of, you know, accessing any kind of care or any type of service that they need? Are they really being put as a priority, or does something need to change, especially when we talk about administering vaccines? Anything you want to say to that, Husky?
Yeah, we're always put at the back of the burners, kind of the way I think about it. Not much attention was really given to Natives with disabilities. I mean, this is all clear across Indian country. As far as vaccines, I know the Disability Rights of California, she sent me an email saying that it wasn't really a priority with the California tribes, and that they're still trying to figure out how to get the vaccinations to the people, but there was nothing to say that those with disabilities would be a priority. And so I think that exists throughout Indian country. I think the other part of that is that not only in this area, but when you look at disabilities in general, employment rates, employment opportunities, training, education, medical services, transportation, all these things are not in the, I guess they say, the plans of the government. They're not a priority. We always get overlooked. We're not asked, what do you think? Like in housing, we try to advocate for universal housing design, which would be ready for homes would be ready for people, even though they didn't have a disability, could live in there, or people with a disability could move in these houses, and they wouldn't have to make very many changes. The other area is education. I mean, this really impacted special needs, special education. And right now, due to the virtual learning, the can't directly access teachers, tutors, therapists, counselors, all of this is happening out there. And then technology barriers, like here on the Navajo Nation, my wife's a teacher and they had to do it through the phone before they got laptops. And a lot of them had to go up on the hill to call in to the teachers. And then they take a picture of the homework and send it in, and the teacher would then go over it with them. And so those kind of things are happening out there. But I just want to say that those parents, you need to monitor their IEPs. If you have any problems with it, you know, you can file a state, there's a state complaint process with your state of education. If you feel like that you're not getting the services you need, because some of them just had to drop education, special education altogether. Some of them have it very limited. And so we'd like to know, let you all to know that you do have rights in that area also. And that just because they're special ed students, that they should be treated differently.
And, you know, we got somebody on the line with us who can go further with that. Thank you for that, Husky. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848. Joining us today out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, is Melissa Wassini, and she is the executive director of the organization Education for Parents of Indian Children with Special Needs, or EPICS. Melissa is Navajo. Our pleasure to have her here with us. Melissa, feel free to further introduce yourself.
Thank you, and good morning to everyone. Melissa Wassening, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, we are happy to have you. And you know what, Husky brought us to a good point. And I'm sure there's a lot that you can expand on in terms of meeting the needs of our students, our children with special needs, and standing up and knowing what your rights are and when they are violated. Filing the proper paperwork to bring attention, to bring change. Go further with that, Melissa. What is it that we are hearing or, you know, parents are talking about, what students are facing in terms of getting the education they deserve? Anything you want to share? Melissa, go ahead. Start us off.
Okay, yes, I do. And thank you for giving me the time. As we all know, you know, pandemic is affecting individuals with disabilities in a different set of challenges. And we hear a lot from parents. We work with, you know, parents, Native American parents from all over the state of New Mexico. And some of the things that we're hearing, you know, especially like in health-wise, all of a sudden they're experiencing interruptions in services, therapies, support, and especially critical health needs. And also, you know, with employment, the same thing, you know, with unemployment, all of a sudden, you know, there's insecurities, stay-at-home orders. And then with education, you know, students are faced with long stretches without access to, you know, in-person education-related services. You know, some of them are not getting the milestones or not meeting the needs of the IEPs, and those are very important. And, you know, we... And all of a sudden, parents are faced, you know, to be teachers and to be therapists and to be doctors. And it caused a lot of parents to become overwhelmed, and the stress levels were up, and panic attacks, anxiety. and, you know, and fear, and also, you know, just really struggling with mental health. And as, you know, as it has been reported, you know, by the other two speakers, that, you know, it really caused some families that we are working with, you know, they have lack of education, they have lack of running water or electricity, and all of a sudden, you know, it's remote learning, and the schools close, and they stay at home, and, you know, it's just been causing a lot of depression and isolation and things like that. So with the IEPs and with the 504 plans that were in place, and all of a sudden they weren't hearing from the teachers, they weren't hearing from the schools, and, you know, calling the schools, you know, some phone calls were being unanswered. So, you know, all that has caused many things, you know, many emotional distress among families. So some of the things, you know, that EPIC has done is, you know, really stepped in to help parents really understand, you know, the process of the IEPs, you know, the process of really advocating and being the voice for their children. And then also, you know, just really going into depth of some of the questions, you know, that needed to be asked, especially with the IEPs, and especially, you know, that we're calling the schools, you know, what are some of the avenues that they can take, and, you know, what are some of the questions that they can ask. So, you know, we have been, along with our training specialists, we have been, you know, really talking with parents and really sending them, you know, on the path of making sure that they call the schools and making sure that they know their rights, because, you know, as it has been mentioned before, you know, there is a special education law, you know, that require, you know, that the parents, and they have the right, you know, even with the IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, you know, it does say that every child, every student, you know, is have equal access to education. So, you know, even with the IEPs, you know, IEPs shouldn't stop, you know, just because the schools close, you know, and just because, you know, that all of a sudden everything's remote. And so those are some of the things, you know, that we really put more intensified trainings on, you know, special education, you know, knowing their rights, and they're really partnering up with even other organizations, you know, such as the Disabilities Rights in New Mexico and Native American Disability Law Center, you know, to really get to the root of, you know, making sure that our parents are making sure, you know, that they know how to advocate for their children. So, you know, those are some of the collaborations, you know, that we really put in place, you know, for our kids, because, you know, our kids are there. Everybody has equal access to education, and that's what we're here to do. And, you know, the parents are really have been thankful and, you know, really being able to ask questions and being able to open up, you know, to our training specialists and to the services, mm-hmm. you know, some of the services that we're providing.
And Melissa, you said IEP. For listeners who don't know, tell them what that is.
Okay, with the IEP, you know, is a plan that is developed, you know, when they go through the special education process. So they usually go through the child fine screening, and then from there they go to the evaluation, and then they also go into the meetings, and that's when, you know, the team gets together, the schools, and they develop an individualized education and program plan, which is the IEP. And the IEP is a plan, you know, that is written statement, you know, for the child with disabilities. And it's developed, it's reviewed, it's revised in the meetings accordance, you know, with the special education law, which is usually the 34 CFR 300-320 through 300-324. And the IEP, it must include, you know, the child's present levels of academic achievement and functional performance. And then also a statement of measurable annual goals, including academic and functional goals. And then also the special education and related services, you know, that that will be provided. And then it also describes how the child's progress towards meeting their annual goals and how they will be measured. And another thing, statement of individual appropriate accommodations. So any accommodations that they might need, you know, within the classroom. And then also they are, the team also determines that the child must, you know, take alternate assessments. And they're given, for example, you know, if there's a test in the classroom and they are given a special test, you know, that they get beat down. Some of them might be verbal, you know, because there's a lot of kids that are hard of hearing or that have visual impairment. So those are some of the accommodations, you know, that can be provided to them as well.
So hey, Melissa, I'm going to jump in here because everything that you just explained, it sounds like it really takes a team and a lot of coordination with the school system. And now that children are doing learning at home, everything that she talked about is now starting to shift more towards the parent. And that I can see, you know, the kind of strain it can put. And all of a sudden, one day, this is what you're having to do, plus keep a job, plus be online yourself. There is a lot there. And I can see, you know, why, you know, so much rises to the top with this and some of the stress and the strain. And Melissa, we think of, you know, where we are. Here we are a year later. A lot of people thought it wouldn't even last that long. Who knows how long we're going to be in this situation. And thinking about, you know, where we are, what we've learned, and how far we still need to go, what are some of the things that you hope people are really taking this time to learn and maybe even shift, or maybe they still need to learn about what needs to change in terms of meeting the needs of our students with special needs? I'd really like to hear you share some thoughts on that too. Go ahead, Melissa.
Okay. So I really think, you know, within the last year, we all learned, you know, even different organizations, even the schools, you know, even at the state level. And I think it's very important to always have a plan. You know, everybody had the plan A. It's good to have a plan B, you know, like what, you know, what if a crisis hit us again? You know, what can be done, you know, especially with students. And I just feel that, you know, having a plan in place and having and being able to have that open communications, you know, with the parents and then also with the teacher, the special education teacher, and the school district representative, even at the state level, you know, and even really pushing pushing ahead, you know, of what, you know, what are some of the what are some of the services, you know, that even the state level, you know, what can we advocate for? You know, for an example, you know, the Yalby Martinez lawsuit that was brought in here in New Mexico, you know, something like that, you know, we really feel that, you know, there needs to be more policies and more procedures and more advocates, you know, that I really need to be the voice, especially for us in special education and disabled individuals. So I just feel that, you know, there needs to be more done, especially in advocacy and especially bringing teachers, you know, with that kind of training, you know, before and they that foot in the classroom, you know, what is special education among, you know, especially the minorities, especially among Native Americans, you know, what are some of the things, you know, to look out for? And then also letting the parents know that, you know, early intervention is so important, you know, it's critical from birth to 3 years old, you know, what can be done, you know, if you find that your children is in need of special education, please, you know, start the process as early as you find out, you know, there are some assessments, there are some testing, you know, that you can also ask your pediatric and then also ask your early childhood, you know, what can be done, you know, really starting early is important. And
sure, you know, and EPICS is definitely one place that where a lot of people start. And we know you all have good resources. Again, the name of the program is Education for Parents of Indian Children with Special Needs. Thanks again to everybody for joining us here today. Thank you to Melissa Wasini, as well as Joseph Ray and Hosky Benali Jr. Tomorrow, we're back with another update on COVID-19 across Native America. I'm Tara Gatewood.
Did you know COVID financial relief in the form of forgivable PPP loans is available to small business owners and independent contractors, including artists? DreamSpring has worked with New Mexicans looking to open or expand their business for over 25 years, and now they're helping provide PPP loans. Information, including how to qualify, at dreamspring.org. That's dreamspring.org. DreamSpring supports this program.
Cachet! Be your own sweetheart this year. Make sure your heart is healthy enough to hold all your love. Contact your local Indian healthcare provider for more information. Visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Ella Kwan.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.